Hello and welcome to Think Ahead, a London Business School podcast, which offers evidence-based discussions and insights to help you navigate big business issues. I'm Julian Birkinshaw, Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship and Vice Dean at London Business School, as well as the host of our Think Ahead podcast series. In this podcast, we discuss career reinvention, answering your questions and offering tips, covering how you get from the light bulb moment about changing career through to successfully making the transition from one career to another. I'm delighted to welcome Herminia Ibarra, Charles Handy Chair in Organisational Behaviour and Professor at London Business School. As well as running a course at London Business School on career change, Herminia is a leading authority on leadership and career development and has written a number of best-selling books on both topics. Herminia, welcome to our Think Ahead podcast.
Thank you, Julian. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So, Herminia, you've been writing and researching in these fields for many, many decades. I've read some of your work on networking, workplace identity, leadership, and so forth. So I'm curious as to why this is now the big focus of your writing and your research. Give us a sense of why career changing is such an important topic.
Sure, I'll give you the headline first. It's very prevalent, more and more prevalent. I started rethinking this topic 2 years ago when my publisher, Harvard Business, asked me to come out with a new edition of my first book, Working Identity, which is about mid-career reinvention. And as I worked on that, I started to see just what a huge topic it is today. And that kind of one foot in front of the other led me to some new research. I mean, really, there's four trends that are making this more and more prevalent. One is we're living longer, and now we've become aware of it. A second is technology is changing everything, creating more opportunities, but also eliminating others. Our companies are changing. They are being disrupted. They are using AI. They are transforming themselves. And most recently, they have been downsizing. There's been a lot of layoffs. And then from a point of view of values in society, there's been a slow, gradual shift such that we want a lot out of our careers. We want meaning. We want purpose. We want balance. We want flexibility. We want challenge. And what the research is showing nowadays is that there's a real mismatch. Most people don't feel like their jobs and their companies are providing that. So there's more of it. And interestingly, even though it's so much more prevalent than 20 years ago, people still find it incredibly hard. And that's what I've become very interested in.
Got it. And I know that you're doing some academic research on this topic. Before we get into some of the practical tips for the listeners, just give us a flavor of what you're doing in this academic study.
Okay. So right now with one of my PhD students, Kendall, we're doing a longitudinal study of people who are at least contemplating, if not in the midst of a career change, and in the later stages of their career, post age 50. And we're following them over time in order to understand how it's really how this very iterative process of taking steps that inform next steps, that help you learn more about what you want, but also about what is actually feasible and available to you. We're very interested in how people break the inertia, especially if you're in if you're in a stable job, now, if there are any nowadays, but if you're in a stable job often, maybe it doesn't meet all your needs. Sometimes you're actually quite unsatisfied, but you're very busy and you don't know what else you want to do instead. Right. Where do you get started?
Right. And so there's all these sources of inertia in your home life as well as in your working life. And essentially you're saying most people just sort of stick with it and they kind of, you know, they're not completely happy in their work, but they just stick with it because there's nothing else.
They stick with it until something happens, and increasingly more and more things are happening. Either the choice is made for them, or they burn out. They have health issues that lead them to have to consider something else. But indeed, the tendency is to stick it out for financial reasons. But even more importantly, you know, people put out this idea of financially, I can't afford it. I'm going to have to take a hit, but in an uninformed way. the biggest problem is that they don't take a step to actually start to investigate a possibility or take a step to break out of the usual suspects, to break out of their network that kind of limits their ability to envision other possibilities.
Got it. So that leads naturally to some advice, and let's start with that. That point. So I'm not, because I'm very happy in my job. I suspect you are as well. That's the beauty of academia. But imagine I'm a mid-50s person who's not completely happy in their work environment. What are the signals I should be picking up on? And what are the kind of the first steps I might take to start to imagine something different?
Yeah. So the signals are there. You know, if you are unhappy, you know it.
Right.
The signal that you're not going to get is some kind of glimmer of this is what you should do instead. Right. But the signals that you should be at least starting to explore other possibilities are there, and you can read them. And they'll always become more acute when you go on holiday or you take some time off, as people saw during the pandemic.
Right.
The thing to do is to consider what is the least expensive thing that I can do to try something out, to expand my mindset. You know, I was interviewing one of our participants recently, and he's made several transitions, and he's got it down to a science. He says, I always start by reading a book on a topic I'm interested. He said, that's a 10 to 15 pound investment. I can do that. If I become more intrigued, then I'll take a course. I'll do a MOOC. I'll do something. And he says, and as I get more interested, I start looking for things that have a cohort base to them, because I start connecting to other people who also share this interest, and I learn more, and I start to network myself into it. And so small steps actually make a huge difference, and not just in figuring out an interest area, but meeting people who also see it as possible and desirable, starting to network into other circles, getting other ideas. I mean, it's the power of weak ties. The people you're close to, they're not going to help you figure it out, because they have the same information you have already, and they tend to pigeonhole you. They can't imagine you in a very different kind of role.
Got it. And what sort of changes are we talking about? I guess it's going to be all of the above, but I mean, sometimes an adjacent move into an industry that you hadn't worked in before, doing something similar. Sometimes it might be a crazy move into, you know, from being a business professional. I'm remembering Lucy Calloway, the FT journalist, who decided she wanted to become a teacher. I mean, do you see any trends in terms of the types of steps, or is it really just a bit of everything?
It really is a bit of everything. It really is a bit of everything. You have people who are more interested in moving into something adjacent. Often, you have people who are wanting to leverage their expertise in a way in which they have more autonomy, maybe as an entrepreneur, maybe as an investor, and maybe working for a smaller, medium-sized enterprise where they can have a bigger leadership role. And then you have people who want to be a wine entrepreneur, a teacher, a documentary filmmaker. It really runs the gamut. Now, how much you need to earn plays a lot into that. But I would say it really is all of the above. You have a lot of people really wanting to explore, if not just the nonprofit sector, organizations that are more purpose-driven. That's been a big trend lately. But you also have many people trying to figure out how they can use AI, leverage the technological advances to do something different. You know, in my study of people 50-plus trying to make career change, we've been surprised at how many people are taking AI courses and how many people are really looking to see what they might be able to do in this very burgeoning space.
Got it. And I guess it's always been the case that mid-50s people move out of full-time employment and become like freelance consultants, sort of selling their services in the area that they have expertise in a slightly more ad hoc way. You're talking for the most part about something a little bit more ambitious here, aren't you?
Yeah.
Which is trying to actually even get employment on a full-time basis in a different area. And I guess that's where it gets more challenging.
It gets harder. And so our colleague, Andrew Scott, for example, has data that shows that employment drops after age 50, full-time employment. And that's one of the things that has driven this kind of white-collar freelancing portfolio career. A lot of people don't want to do that anymore. You know, they experience a lot of precarity through the pandemic. And for people who've been doing that for some time, many are what I call boomerangs. They're wanting to go back into full-time employment because it's lonely, because they miss the team, and because they want greater stability. So the trends go both ways. And the other thing that's important to think about is this portfolio thing. It works when you live in a country in which you have health care. It doesn't work so well when you live in a country in which your benefits are tied to your job. So it's not as generalizable as you might think.
That's interesting. So help us with the practical example of somebody who's decided they do want to get into full-time employment again in a completely different area. And be as practical and sort of helpful as we can here, because I can just imagine that is really quite a big challenge. The number of rejections you get when you start applying for jobs in areas where you don't have the obvious experience. I mean, you talked about the first few steps, which are obviously little things that you can do without anybody else getting involved. But at some point, you've got to try to persuade somebody that you are worth taking on.
Yes, it is a huge challenge. And it's not just for the 50 plus. You know, at mid-career, a lot of people are trying to do this as well. In fact, younger and younger. And it is the same method. And you're absolutely right. Nobody is going to hire you unless you've already had experience in something. One of the reasons why mid-career programs like our Sloan are on the rise is because people realize that they need some kind of intermediary, they need further training, they need further broadening in order to be able to do these things. But the stuff that I've talked about is really more about how do you start exploring interests. What you need to do then is get on a project, volunteer, take a course that gives you a credential, something that gets you doing it more and more specifically. Right. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen.
So as you say, doing it voluntarily, there are often ways of developing a skill through a nonprofit route, which then presumably you can leverage into getting paid for such a job.
It's not as easy as that, but I guess what I wanted to come back to is you've painted a picture of applying for a lot of jobs, and that's really not how it works. I've seen a lot of people get very frustrated spending a lot of time on LinkedIn at a fairly senior level trying to apply for jobs, and it doesn't work. We know from academic research that people get jobs through personal contacts. And that's the only way. This is a kind of a big networking game. It's about a lot of conversations in which, again, you are informing yourself about what it takes and what's available, but you're also informing your own interests about where there might be a match. And this, one of the things that I've learned is this idea of transferable skills is a huge myth. Nobody cares about your transferable skills. What they care about is if you understand their problems and you are a match, you have a solution, a way of operating, a set of skills that really matches what is needed in that particular context.
Got it. And you'd mentioned our Sloan program, and I'll just acknowledge for listeners what that is. This is it's a 1 year full-time program at London Business School. Typically people who are 40 plus, I mean, sometimes, you know, 60, looking for this sort of mid-career transition. A few of them are still accelerating their careers. Most of them, I would say, are interested in transitioning. And you teach them and you know them better than I do. But my understanding is a lot of them getting jobs through this Sloan alumni network. They actually get to know their colleagues and find jobs that way. Is that
correct?
Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Because again, the older we get, the less likely it is that we get jobs through the institutional methods, through regular application procedures. Yeah. You might do it via a headhunter if you're quite senior, but if you're in that kind of senior middle or junior senior, it really is through the network.
Yep. So you used a word with me before we started that this is an under-institutionalized process? I mean, just unpack that for the listeners, please.
Sure, and apologies for the academic jargon, but it's the best way I have to describe the fact that as we make career changes, particularly later in our careers, and already think about what does it mean, career change? That means you're doing something quite different in a different kind of environment. Yeah. It's not linear. It's not, the next step isn't clear, nor are the five steps for getting from being, you know, a finance director to running a medium-sized winery, for example. It's unclear what credentials you need, what are the skills needed, what are the steps you take. We don't know how long it's going to take. You don't necessarily have market intermediaries for that. There isn't a course you take that gives you a master's in it. Right. You're not doing it with other people. So there's a lot of uncertainty about the process, and that's what I mean by under-institutionalized. It's not like making partner in a law firm. Could be hard, but you know the steps you have to take.
Good, and which is why, of course, you're saying as an individual, you've got to be proactive. You've got to find your own paths through it. But let's take the employer perspective then, because it's very easy to say big companies should take seriously this opportunity because there's all these talented people who are leaving the workforce.
But they don't take it seriously. They do not.
Exactly.
We focus so much on big companies, and this is not where it's happening. Right. It really is in the small and medium-sized enterprise sector. Also in entrepreneurship, by the way. Entrepreneurship rates go up with age, and successful ones as well. But big companies are not set up to do this. Now, some are experimenting with how to retain people who want more flexibility and want to muck around and want to learn new things, and I can talk about that.
Yeah.
But getting hired into big companies, the more senior you become, is very, very hard. But there's a big landscape of smaller firms that could really use those skills.
Now, that does make sense. But do follow that lead that you just opened up, which is big companies experimenting with trying to find creative ways of keeping some of their better.
There's people. Two things I've seen. One thing I studied in depth in the early stages was an experiment that Unilever and Shell were running in terms of creating internal marketplaces for people to match people who had some spare time to projects that needed work. And so very much AI fueled. They've gotten better at making matches, and people have really valued this as a way to get out of their silo, as a way to pick up some new skills, as a way to continue to stretch themselves during somewhat more slack times. And that seems to be running quite well. And I know lots of companies have experimented with that. The other kinds of experiments that are going are, And this one I've only looked at from afar, but also at Unilever, is they've been playing around with how do you get both the flexibility and the security of a gig economy internally. Mm. And one of the experiments they have going is something where you get a contract, but not a job, and that contract gives you benefits, pension, healthcare, and then you get in some kind of minimum salary, and then you get paid for the gigs that you are involved in. And they have found take up in two sectors. One is parents of young children who want a bit more flexibility but don't want to leave the workplace, and more senior, older people who are starting to look out towards retirement, who don't want to retire, and again want to play around with different kinds of possibilities and ramp down the amount of time they're spending at work.
Got it. But to your earlier point, I mean, these are good things to do, and they seem attractive, and a lot of the mega trends are pushing us towards doing it. And yet companies are still a bit resistant to really institutionalizing these things, making them part of their overall internal labor
market.
I
mean, you know this from your own work, Julian. It takes companies a very long time before they catch up to the possibilities that technology has afforded them.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're still struggling with digital transformation. One of the big struggles right now is how to integrate a more hybrid and a more freelance contractor workforce. You know, there's just a lot of issues that they're working with, and at a time when the focus has been more on getting smaller and leaner, the focus hasn't been on how do we hire more older folks. No. And I also have to say, those older folks, by and large, don't want to go work for these big companies. Mm. In fact, that's what they're escaping. And the other thing that's been interesting in this academic research that we've been doing is the extent to which people don't want that. They describe toxic environments. They describe not having any time for themselves to an extent that it's affecting their health. They describe way too much stress, and they describe values misalignment. And so it's not what they want.
Got it. A final question, which is about what should I do? For the person who's been trying to do what you're saying, but getting really frustrated and they feel like they're banging their head against a wall, they're not making any progress. I mean, is there a point where you kind of just give up and go back to what you were doing before? Because a lot of, you know, mid-50s people do still have a CV which says, I can do that job because I've done it before.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things is I've also seen a number of people engage in this process and then decide, in fact, it's not so bad where I am right now. And that can work when they're able to return to that on their own terms, in the sense of not having it be as overwhelming and encapsulating, and being able to kind of claw back some agency and autonomy about how they want to do their work. Because a lot of this career change stuff as we get older has to do with how do I have autonomy over what I do, control over my work schedule, and how do I be able to focus more of my time on the things I do well and enjoy doing? Yeah. Yeah. And if you can do that within the context of your current employment, fantastic.
Right. Yeah. Good. We've been talking mostly about mid-50s because that has been the focus of your work. But clearly, a lot of these lessons apply at whatever age you are. Do you want to just talk briefly about how it's different for younger or even older
people? Sure. And that's most of the work that I have done. The research I have done has looked at primarily people in their 30s and approaching 40 and their desire for career change and how they go about it. You know, the method doesn't change by age. Maybe the motivation, maybe the urgency, but the method doesn't change. And it really involves three things. One is you create experiments. You try out stuff as actively as you can on a project at your work, on a nonprofit board, taking a class, giving a class. You try things out that get you into new networks, and you use those new networks to kind of hone those possibilities and to understand better what you're trying to do. And as you gain more knowledge and more experience, you try to carve out a bit of time to step back and reflect, what am I learning and what's the next step? And that's how you do it. And people don't like to hear that until they've seen it work, because they have been so trained in the idea, don't make a move until you know where you're going. Right. Right. And if you do that, you're not going to move. You're not going to figure it out. You have to move in order to know what it is that you want.
Got it. Final question, back to London Business School itself, because obviously you run courses here. Tell us a little bit about some of the current teaching programs that you've created in this area.
So we've just run a pilot only for our alums, and we're going to scale it up and create an offering that is open to everyone. I think it kicks off in September this fall, and it's going to be called Career Change at Mid-Career. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it structures in what we know really helps people, and that is having kindred spirits and having guides through the process. So we have designed this as an experience that unfolds over 3 or 4 months, in which you have some of the content from me, but more importantly, people are put in small coaching groups with professional coaches, in which they have to go through my process, but with others, talking about their experiences. And we really learned in the pilot that just ended now in March just how helpful that is, because people feel very lonely in this process. And even just the fact of having to articulate what you're trying to do or what you're confused about helps you get clarity. It's been very motivating for people to have support and company through this process.
Got it. and I'm guessing a few listeners are going to be quite interested in that. So say the name of the course again so they can find it.
Career Change at Mid-Career.
Career Change at Mid-Career. And undoubtedly, if you go to the London Business School website, you can find...
I don't know if it's been posted yet. Okay. We've been putting the final touches on it, Perfect. But stay tuned.
Perfect. Good. We must wrap up there. First, thank you, Herminia, for joining us today and sharing your excellent advice and guidance.
Thank you, Julian.
Thank you. You have been listening to Think Ahead, brought to you by the editorial team at Think at London Business School. Follow us here for more episodes or find us on Apple or Spotify. For more faculty research insights and information about our Think Ahead event and podcast series, go to london.edu/think. You can also sign up there for our free regular email newsletter to get updates on our latest publications direct to your inbox.